Hello, listeners. I'm Jamia.
I'm Jamila, and we are Live Voices.
Here from librarians of color, what speaks to the fullness of their careers, including successes and challenges. How do they do it? Join us to find out more about their Live Voices. Welcome to Season 5, Episode 3. Today we have an interview with Conrado Saldivar.
Conrado Saldivar is past president of the Wyoming Library Association and tech services manager at the Natrona County Library in his hometown of Casper, Wyoming. He received his MLIS in 2021 from the University of Washington iSchool and is a 2019 ALA Spectrum Scholar. As one of few BIPOC librarians in Wyoming and as a leader in the Wyoming library community, he has worked to support EDI efforts in Wyoming, both for library staff and his community. In October 2023, he received the Wyoming Library Association's Outstanding Hero Heroine Award alongside the legislative committee chair for his work in fighting against adverse legislation that would target library materials written by and about members of the LGBTQIA+ and BIPOC communities.
What drew you to librarianship?
So this is way back in 2015. I realize I'm pretty new to the field, but I was about to leave my hometown of Casper, Wyoming. A music teacher from junior high had posted that the library was hiring for what was then a reference specialist position. Titles have changed since then, but really it was the part of the qualifications for in that job description were technology, being able to understand and teach technology, which helping my parents learn technology, it was its own monumental task, it seems. Customer service, I had quite a bit of a background in the food industry and working at a country club. But then at the very bottom, it said Spanish speakers are encouraged to apply. And that was one of those things where it was like, well, I could move to Denver, I could go somewhere else, but I really like my hometown. I'll just apply and see what happens. I applied and it really worked out great for me. I think pretty quickly, within at least a year, I had a great team of supervisors who really showed me their dedication to the community and making sure that they were meeting the needs of the community. It was pretty quick after that that I decided I need to get my master's degree. I need to go to grad school. Fortunately, found out I had cancer and kind of cancer very quickly took away my savings. All is well now, but I delayed my applying for graduate programs for a little bit longer. But when I started applying to graduate schools, I really knew that librarianship was going to be for me. I applied to a couple of schools, ended up going to the University of Washington and started in 2018 and finished through their online cohort, finished August of 2021. But I think what really drew me is the ability to give back to my community. At that point, I was very much at the reference desk. I was a notary who spoke Spanish. I had strong technology skills. I knew the Spanish-speaking community. I knew my community just here in my hometown. And that kind of really settled it for me of this is the career that I wanted to be in. And I again, thank my supervisors for showing me what it meant to be a librarian, both former and current supervisors here at the Natrona County Library in Casper, but also at the Wyoming State Library, where I worked for a year and a half before coming back to my hometown library. It's kind of a back and forth situation, but it's very much that giving back to the community aspect is what really brought me into librarianship.
Yeah, I love that aspect about giving back to the community. And I think that is definitely something that is like a running thread amongst many of us librarians and archivists and information professionals. And I think, you know, that's one of the things that is unique about the profession is being able to do that and still thrive in some ways as well, right? Which I think sometimes doesn't always go hand in hand, right? Giving back to the community sometimes means you're having to, get by on maybe limited resources and things like that. And so I think that the combination with that of librarianship and that community giving is a unique one.
That's, yeah, no, exactly. And I think that's, about to leave my hometown. But, there was something that kept me here. I love Wyoming. There have been so many reasons for me to want to leave Wyoming, but there, the things that keep me here are so strong. My family immigrated here from Mexico, gosh, 40, 50 years ago. But since then, we have a really great, aunts and uncles have moved here. Cousins have moved here. So really, there's definitely that family component that keeps me here in town. But again, yeah, it is my hometown. I want to see it do as well as it can. And I think the working in a library is a really great opportunity to meet that.
Yes, and I want to acknowledge your vulnerability in sharing with us that you did have cancer, and I'm glad that you are better now. And the reality of, the cost of that, you said you had to use your savings, and, that's definitely unfortunate that you had to do that, and so many people have to do that. And I definitely resonate with the component of your family is what keeps you in a place that's, you have reasons to leave, but, you stay because of your family. So, I appreciate your story, and it's definitely something that I resonate with for sure.
Also, just before we move on to the next question, but that part about staying with your family, I think there's like sometimes there's emphasis on how, we as librarians move around a lot and can be nomadic, but I think that majority of us are actually, like you, trying to stay home, close to home and close to family. So I think that's another side of the coin that we don't always like really hear about or talk about, and how important that is to many of us. As a BIPOC librarian, what do you view as critical to the success of the field?
Yeah, it's being in Wyoming, obviously a predominantly white state, and then librarianship in general also being predominantly white. It's interesting to see how libraries work within that larger makeup of races in Wyoming. I do think as libraries try to do more outreach and bring people into the library by going out into the community, we have to accurately reflect the makeup of our communities via our staff. And that is something that is really tough to do in Wyoming when the percentage of people of color, BIPOC individuals is already so low. I was a Spectrum Scholar in 2019, and I think every time the application opens, I send out an email to our statewide listservs on, hey, if anyone, please, if you want to get a graduate degree, if you're already in a library, I would love to help you apply for this scholarship to make sure, do anything I can do within my realm to get you that graduate degree to help support your progress. So we have more BIPOC librarians in Wyoming. So far, I'm still the only Spectrum Scholar from Wyoming, hoping that changes sometime soon. But it really comes down to encouraging people who maybe are in paraprofessional roles to, hopefully take that next step. And that unfortunately means finances. That is a big thing. I think one thing that I'm very proud of during my time as president is I explained as president of the Wyoming Library Association is we have a continuing education grant, a development grant for people, for members to apply for. And it was set to $1,000 a year. And looking at the rising cost of higher education just in general, that $1,000 wasn't going far anymore. It could maybe get one person a couple of credits. But really, if two people apply for it, then someone's missing out or they're really splitting that $1,000. So I was able to not necessarily convince the board, but explain to the board why in the 2023 Library Association budget, why we bumped that up to $1,250. I admit, not a huge change, but to see the board also latch onto that and say, yes, continuing education is important, that was very, very refreshing to see. But I do think we do need more in Wyoming, especially more BIPOC librarians, just to accurately represent the communities that we're serving. And a great story that I have is, as a notary, a Spanish-speaking notary, when you're doing notary services, you can't use a translator. Maybe different in other states, but at least here in Wyoming, you have to be able to communicate directly with the person needing the notary services. So we had an individual came in, they needed something notarized for their immigration process. And the sense of relief that I saw on their face when they saw that I, or both saw that I was a person of color, but also heard me speak Spanish. I mean, immediate just relief that they, someone that they could communicate directly with someone at the library. And then from there, I mean, that helps libraries grow. They go out back to their family, to their friends, and tell people, hey, did you know there's someone who speaks Spanish at the library? They offer all of these things. So definitely starting with that, you know, if we want libraries to succeed and meet the needs of all of the people in our communities, we have to make sure that we're reflecting that in our staffing levels.
Well, that just, you know, that example just really is, gives us a great idea of the impact that it has, you know, to find BIPOC people of color, Black, Indigenous librarians, library workers who are present and visible, right, to the public. And that impact on those people to be able to just come in there and have a sense of relief that they know there's someone there who kind of gets them and who they can communicate with. Like that goes a long way, honestly. And I'm sure that they were able to really, like you said, spread the word to others about who's there in the library and how you can get some help if you need it.
Yeah, and I think so after I left, we had two Spanish speakers at one point, and I left, or the other Spanish speaker left, and then I left, and the library saw that language services are, you know, we have to have people who can communicate with our patrons. So they actually contracted with a service. Yes, you are talking to a person on an iPad, but just to see that commitment from my library that we do need to be able to offer these various languages to our patrons was really great to see. When I came back earlier in April of 2023, so there were some people who saw me walking through the stacks and they were just, you know, are you here visiting? What are you doing here? And like, no, I'm backpack. And they were Spanish speakers. And just the pure joy on their face to know that I was back, even though I'm here in a different position, I'm more behind the scenes. But I do get called out every now and again where they just want to say hi. Someone went to Cancun and she picked me up some souvenir pens with, you know, they're not, you can't use the pens, but it was just that very heartwarming to see that my presence here in the library was, you know, exciting to members of the Spanish speaking community.
That's so dope. So I think this next question leads perfectly to what you're already talking about. So you talked about wage and making equitable practices. So how do you promote equitable practices in your work in the library?
Yeah, so now, so I am tech services manager. Now, before I was in the adult services department, front-facing, working a service desk. Now I think one of the big projects that I recently finished and checked off, when we look at the catalog itself, and is the catalog equitable? A couple of years ago, maybe 4 years ago, all of the accent marks in the catalog caused, you know, they broke essentially. They all got translated into weird characters and a combination of vowels. And I kind of worked on it before. Didn't get too far, but a couple of months ago, I thought, you know, if we're really going to promote the Spanish collection, that we have Spanish speakers here, that we have this this app that others who don't speak English can still come into the library and use our services, we have to at least make sure that the catalog is accurately reflecting the collection. So I went through a collection. Our Spanish collection is about 900 materials from the adult collection and the children's collection, but I fixed every single broken accent mark, whether that was in the author names, in the titles, in the summaries. So that's one way that I think that does work to create a more equitable catalog for members of the community. But I think at the larger level, the statewide level, in 2020, after George Floyd was murdered, the Wyoming Library Association really wanted to think about equity, diversity, and inclusion, and what it could do to do something for its members or provide resources for its members. Because I was a Spectrum Scholar, they knew I had some communications and some contacts in the larger library community. They asked me if I would be the chair of their ad hoc EDI committee. And we created an EDI statement that, you know, with a committee of 13 people is, you know, that's a pretty large committee for Wyoming. But we were able to create something that I think each department in a library, whether you're school, public, academic, special, you would be able to take something from that statement and apply it directly to your day-to-day job. It's probably time to update it now, but that EDI committee, I had to step down when I became president. But we were able to offer a lot of trainings on, not necessarily trainings at first, but open conversations where we're telling Wyoming Library staff, come to this time, you know, read this very short article just to break down some of those barriers to EDI practices in general. Watch a short 2 to 3 minute video, and then come here in a safe space where we can talk about all of these things. I think that really helped bring people into the conversation without, you know, pouncing on them and saying, you're wrong, that's not what you should be doing. That then transitioned, those open conversations transitioned into, again, we were able to, the board was approved a budget for the EDI committee, which was, you know, surprising. I thought I was going to have to go in there guns blazing trying to convince people, but the board saw that, yes, this is something that is important to all Wyoming Library staff. And we were able to bring outside presenters to offer a lunch and learn series. So we brought someone in to talk about gender inclusivity. We had someone else come in to talk about accessibility just in general in libraries. And then because I had a presentation in my back pocket about implicit bias and microaggressions, I also offered a lunch and learn series on that. So while not directly related to my library, I think that's something, especially in Wyoming, we have to be so dependent on each other here that we can't look, and it's not beneficial to look just at my library itself. So through the Wyoming Library Association, I've been really able to, I think at least been really able to help others maybe incorporate some more equitable practices in their libraries. So hopefully that helps. And I know some people who are at my library now who also attended those lunch and learn series and those open conversations. So just again, opening up that conversation has been a great way to introduce other library staff into equitable practices across Wyoming and in my own library.
That's great work. Great to hear. Particularly the dialogue and open conversations that you're having, because that can spurn so many things, right? And even things that you probably haven't seen yet that will come from that. So I think that really is a great kind of program that you see it in other libraries as well, when that work happens and the changes that can happen as a result, particularly in places where you know it's like so needed.
No, that's so, right? Oh my gosh, it's so needed in Wyoming. So
only imagine. No shade to Wyoming, but I can only imagine.
No, but that was, we had our conference in October. And one of the sessions, we were running a little bit low on program proposals. So I submitted one. I didn't really know if they would accept it. It was EDI in action, examples from Wyoming libraries. But the general purpose of that program was how to talk about EDI and promote EDI practices without actually saying equity, diversity, inclusion, social justice, you know, like access in general, like, because they become, at least especially in Wyoming, very hot topic, really fiery responses just when you mention those. Being able to not only offer that in the past, but then also at the conference, here's what libraries are doing to promote this, and here's how to talk about it so that you don't upset the people who approve your budgets.
Yeah, because y'all have to do that. A lot of us have to do that dance now, right? Because legislatively they're coming at people. So
particularly around CRT and, yeah, you know, like social justice. So yeah, I think that's becoming commonplace, which is unfortunate.
Yep.
But it is what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, again, we're kind of like leading into, you're already kind of giving us answers that lead into the next questions, you've been a very vocal advocate for libraries in your career, often addressing issues around politics and policy that impact library workers and patrons alike. Can you speak to some of the issues you've had to tackle, such as book bans and the right to read, obscenity protections for librarians, and Wyoming libraries leaving ALA?
Yeah. How much time do we have? No, I'm just kidding.
Seriously, no. Right.
Not all night, no.
No, but so I think it's first very important for me to acknowledge that I am a male in a female dominated field, and I really skyrocketed very quickly to being seen as a library leader and being elected as vice president of the Wyoming Library Association, of being having all of these opportunities that have been given to me, whether I asked for them or not, because I think that, you know, I do recognize that at least in especially in Wyoming, there are people who have been doing this way longer than I have, and they have not, you know, they've really struggled. Most and many of them are women in Wyoming. So I just wanted to clarify that, you know, I acknowledge that in 8 years, you wouldn't expect someone to go from starting in the library to master's degree president of the Library Association, testifying in front of committees and working at the statewide level. So, so back to the question. Yeah, so I think all of these are essentially interrelated, and they are when you look at the wider perspective. Yeah, it's a good, I don't know if you want to call it a hot mess, but it's very much a hot mess in some places. A lot of this started, I was kind of watching it before I even, yeah, I was still finishing up my graduate degree. We were seeing some issues out of Campbell County in Wyoming, where they posted on their social media, on their Facebook page, about Rainbow Book Month. Here's some books you can read for June. And that caused a firestorm. Well, you know, what does the county endorse? Is this a county holiday, an acknowledged county holiday? And then a former legislator took that and saw, oh, they have a magician coming, found she just so happened to be trans, and really created this fake narrative that the library was bringing in a trans performer, drag queens, to trans our children in the libraries. And that, you know, this was happening before, right when I was saying, yes, I'll run for vice president. And it really just kind of spiraled from there. That library, in July of 2023, they did fire their executive director because she refused to move books without them going through the formal request for reconsideration process. So, you know, an icon in Wyoming, Terry Leslie is. Yeah, it's been a wild ride these past 2 years. So when I was elected to the vice presidency position, it was October of 2021. My first day at the state library was like December 2nd or 3rd of that year. And the state librarian, just during my orientation process, said, oh, and by the way, the president is going to resign because he's going to be accepting a position outside of Wyoming, and it's not in the best interest of someone who's not living in Wyoming to still be leading the Wyoming Library Association. So it was one of those like, oh man, my training year, that vice presidency year, is essentially gone. So I had 3 months to kind of figure out how to navigate all of this. But yeah, it's been essentially putting out a lot of hotspots, not only in Campbell County, but a lot of our school districts have been having issues about access to materials. The current narrative says that it's about sexually explicit materials. And I keep telling everyone who's, you know, do you support sexually explicit materials? And I say, we can't forget that what prompted all of this was Rainbow Book Month, was the content of the books representing the LGBTQ community. One of the school districts, they're the group that is very much trying to remove books from libraries. They've targeted about 112 different books. 40, some of those are feature stories about, by, for the LGBTQ community. 30, some of those feature are written by or about the BIPOC community. So we can't, you know, in talking about censorship and sexually explicit materials, they're the majority of the, you know, it's for those communities to make up such a small percentage in Wyoming, but, you know, they make up over 30% of the book challenges of the books that people want removed from shelves. You know, they're trying to quiet and remove the lived experiences of those communities from library shelves. So we've been, the Library Association really had to work a lot networking with all of those hotspots and providing talking points and working with our pride groups and working with local groups that have started and need some guidance on what is the collection development process? What are the collection policies? What are requests for reconsideration? What are what's the case law surrounding all of this? So coordinating that way, it's definitely been interesting just because we are a volunteer organization. I still had to work my 40 hours. And even though they provided me with a lot of opportunity to do a lot of the association work on the clock, there are some things you can't do on the clock. You can't advocate. You can't go testify on the clock. So setting those boundaries of, you know, how much time do I have and how much energy do I have? But yeah, those books essentially all spiraled into suddenly we're facing obscenity, you know, protections and trying to defend against those. In the general session, the 2023 general session, we saw three bills that were targeted against the obscenity exemption in our statutes that say, you know, librarians cannot be prosecuted if they are providing obscenity in the course of bona fide work. But I think what that was, what they were skipping was the fact that no book in Wyoming had been determined to be obscene. We have in our statutes, the Miller test is in our statutes. And, you know, Joe Smith off of the street can't come in and say that book is obscene. It is a legal definition. A judge or a jury has to say, yes, this book meets the three criteria. It's been evaluated as a whole. It is obscene. So, you know, we're already facing that uphill battle of trying to correct information. And we're using a lot of our energy to say, no, that book is not obscene. And there are no obscene materials in Wyoming libraries. And that would, they use that soundbite from one of my testimony in a different podcast that said, oh, really? You know, and it started off the podcast with me saying, there are no obscene books in Wyoming libraries. And then it just kind of spiraled from there. But we really had to coordinate. And thankfully, we saw this coming 2 years ago. So we really had to call on all of our connections that we had established throughout that 2 years. We had to use our call to action, which we rarely ever have to do, our legislative committee. Our chair, she's phenomenal. She did a fantastic job. She was the brains behind it. I was just the face kind of in front of the committees. But we testified three separate times against bills. The first one, it died in committee, or it was pulled from committee because it wasn't ready for prime time. The second one did have more support. Six members voted against it, six of the nine. So they only had three members of the committee that it was in front of. Who were in support of removing the exemption. The third one was kind of an interesting obscenity related bill because it tried to shift the determination of obscenity away from the existing statute onto community standards. And in the Miller test, the key word that it uses when it talks about community standards is contemporary community standards. What had been happening, that representative who was from Campbell County, where the Rainbow Book Month, the trans musician who's trying to trans our kids. Once something that they had tried doing was shifting, including in their mission statement, that the library collection will reflect community standards. And what we heard from that board chair at the time was that as the chair, she gets to determine what those community standards are. She's an older white woman in her, you know, at least in her 50s. So it's not most likely not going to be contemporary community standards that reflect everyone that that is in that community. But again, yes, they all failed. We took quite a bit of heat from people wondering why libraries were becoming politically active. I think that's that point of our libraries neutral. I wasn't there representing a specific library. I was there representing the Library Association membership. Had to point out a couple of times that the Library Association can lobby. We contract with a lobbyist. We can back candidates if we want to, just because of our 501c6 status. It seems like I really know all of this stuff well, but I had to learn on the fly. I'll be honest. It was, if you've ever seen a video of a duck paddling, gliding across the water, it's gracefully going across the water, but underneath the surface, the duck is just frantically fighting for its life, trying to keep on going. So thankfully, I had a great team behind me to do this and to support libraries. Also really, with all of this too, the Campbell County Library was the first library to disassociate from the American Library Association. This happened October 2022, the day before our superintendent of public instruction held a conference about the sexualization of children via library materials. So as I was in the parking lot getting ready to go into that conference, just undercover per se, I read that article that they had disassociated from the American Library Association. So I found the recording of the meeting, and the director, Terry Leslie, former director, she clarified and said, "Does this include the Wyoming Library Association?" And they immediately said, "Yes, of course it does. They have the similar goals. They both talk about intellectual freedom. They are both socialist, Marxist organizations, whatever." So it did include the Wyoming Library Association. They had never reached out to the Wyoming Library Association about what we actually provide to Wyoming libraries and Wyoming library workers. So it's been interesting to see how that has shaped. Two of their board members are now members of the World Library Association that is apparently going to counter the American Library Association. It's the conservative version of it. So far, they don't have any training material, so I'm not sure exactly what they're doing. But it's been quite the whirlwind, I think is the best way to put it. All of that work, because when you think about, yes, I'll volunteer to run for vice president, and then suddenly you're testifying to protect library workers, not something you expect, but it did culminate with the legislative committee chair and myself getting the outstanding hero and heroine awards at our last conference. Again, it's very much been very tough. I think when you're juggling full-time work, family, friends, social life. When I moved back to Casper to take my current position, I also figured, well, I'll buy a house. That has also been just very stressful. But I think something that I recently presented to another group is that we can't separate how this started versus the narratives, the words that are being used to describe it now. It did very much start with targeted attacks on the LGBTQ community, on BIPOC stories. And we can't lose sight of that, because once we start saying, oh, you're right, we don't need sexually explicit materials, the reality is that the stories and the first books that are going to be subject to new policies are going to be those lived experiences of the LGBTQ and BIPOC communities. Yeah, so I'm thankful that I've been in a position where I can use my voice. And again, that kind of goes back to kind of fast tracking from starting in a library in 2015 to where I am now, because of all the help I've had along the way. Again, as a man in this profession, I already have a step up, unfortunately. But I'm using that to make sure that I drive the Wyoming library community forward. I hope, anyways. So I think that's one of my goals, is to use my position, my privilege, to continue advancing equal access to library materials for all Wyomingites. We're the equality state. One of our mantras is live and let live. And when you look at a lot of the what every time we show up on national media, it's like, oh, come on, Wyoming. It's like, what are we doing? And it goes very counter to that live and let live, that equality state mentality. So hopefully I'm trying to bring that back to Wyoming, via the work that I do.
First of all, Wyomingites, I did not know that's what y'all were called. I learned something new today for sure. And second, I definitely can see how the work that you're doing is definitely pushing Wyoming libraries forward. I mean, you've touched on a lot of, I think, major issues, and it's crazy that you've actually had to deal with all of this in your, short term as president. Plus, how you got to be president and having to be thrown into that. Like, you've had a lot of obstacles, and it just sounds like you really have taken on the task and really been able to do some things. So that's great. I applaud you.
Well, thank you.
So that's a lot. It's a lot to deal with, a lot to learn. And you didn't have that year that you need that time to see how the thing is ran, and then like you and I'm glad you made the point that this is strategic, this is well funded, these book bans, these legislative initiatives. So we that's what you have to keep in mind. It's not just it didn't just come out of anywhere. it's very well funded and very organized and strategic. And hopefully us library associations, workers, all of us can be more strategic as well, because our children or anyone deserve the right to get the materials that they need to read. And let's be honest, our children, if that's what they're saying we are, quote unquote grooming, they have access to so much on their devices. So this is the least of our worries is a book, okay? And the more you bring attention to it, the more children want to see what's the big deal about this. So I'm just saying, as a
No,
parent, I know this.
that's exactly it. That at that presentation that I was at, a couple of the other panel members, one of them was a school board member, and he said, it's not the books on the shelves that are providing sexually explicit content, it's the phones that we're providing to our children. And he had a great point that this this argument for parental rights, everyone's talking about parental rights, and I need to be able to decide, that book is not okay for the school. Get it out of here. And he mentioned that what that argument fails to acknowledge is that parental responsibilities, the expectation for parental responsibilities, are being pushed off to the side. And the words we use is essentially meant to remove access, because we're saying parents have rights without acknowledging that parents also have responsibilities to monitor what their kids read in libraries, to monitor what they're doing in a library. School libraries, public libraries, they're not babysitters. So that's definitely a huge, huge component. And then, yes, to the point of, if you tell a kid, no, don't do this, they're going to do it. And that was a public library director. She commented and she said, I didn't have a lot of the books that are currently in the news until they got in the news. And then the teen said, I want to see what they're talking about. You tell me that I shouldn't be able to read it, I want to read it now. So then she ordered them for the library, because that the controversy of you shouldn't be reading this, kids, teens are going to say, watch. I will be reading these. So yeah, just an interesting makeup of how all of these different pieces that, you know, the well-funded groups, it's all the way now at the national level, with committee hearings and the Department of Education now being involved. So yeah, it's an interesting place that libraries are in now. Something that I didn't expect when I started my graduate program in 2018 is, you know, how all of the theory would have to become practice in the political environment that we're now in.
Yes. Yeah. It might be a course, an additional course of how to navigate this legally, because it's a lot, you know, and to the point of parental rights, like, what about those parents that want their children to read BIPOC books that are authored by BIPOC people, or, you know, showcase BIPOC people or LGBTQIA plus people, and are written by people in the community? Like, you're taking away their rights too. And like you said, it's up to the parents to have these conversations with their children, to monitor what's going on. And it's like, it's not on the libraries. It's not just like with music, you know, you don't want your child to listen to explicit music. That's on you, you know, the best you can do to ensure that. And if not, then you can't shelter them for everything. Like, it'd be nice to put them in a little bubble, but it's just, they have access to so much, and it's just, that's just the reality. And you just gotta be willing to have those conversations. So.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's definitely that conversation component. And that was a big portion about that panel discussion was, even if they don't, if we don't change opinions, they're at least slightly more informed to have more accurate conversations about this, about the larger impact that removing these stories is going to have on our kids. Yeah, it's, we'll see what the next fight is, or how it evolves down the road.
For sure. So this leads greatly into our next question. As a now former State Library Association president, what would you say was your biggest contribution and or impact to the field while serving in that role?
You know, this is tough because I wish I could say that I successfully testified for a bill that would provide more funding for public libraries, successfully testified for changing, you know, requiring that a certified school librarian is in every school in Wyoming. But unfortunately, I have to say that I kept librarians out of jail. And I'm like getting emotional. you know, that's, looking back, like, it was a very hard experience, testifying, knowing that there were faces, there were individual library workers, my colleagues, my really great friends, my managers, my directors, my bosses, who were going to be affected by this legislation if I didn't do enough, or if I didn't do it well enough. So I think that would be, you know, again, I wish I could have done something positive, but I at least didn't allow anything negative to happen. Yeah, it's, you know, I wish I could have done more in that, what ended up being 21 months of that presidency position. But I don't know, I guess I think that what that has done is it's reinvigorated me. I think I saw that libraries can't be quiet, that we have to drive impact, that we have to issue calls to action. And now that we've hopefully gone through the worst of it, that when we have some positive legislation, that we are ready to go. We know that there are people who are rational, people who are willing to listen to us, willing to appreciate what libraries do in Wyoming and across the country. Because we do provide vital services for the communities we serve. So yeah, I guess I kept myself, my colleagues out of jail.
That's a huge impact. Yeah. That's a huge impact. Like, who wants to deal with the state in that way? You know what I mean? Like, because I provided your people access to information? Like, that's wild. So that's a great impact. And yeah, any more than that, good grief. Like,
right. I think that that is definitely a positive.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously the situation and the scenario is not a positive, but the work that you did towards, you know, helping librarians is definitely a positive thing, and had an impact, a significant impact. So yeah, don't downplay that at all.
Yeah, don't do that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's just wild that and like you said, if people in our profession don't realize now that we aren't neutral, then I don't know when they'll wake up about that. We never been neutral, because we always have to make a decision. What are we providing in the spaces? What materials are we allow access for? Who, for how, where, when? Like, that's all political, whether you want to realize it or not. So, like, just, you know, I understand the idea behind it. Like, we're neutral, we're, you know, in regards to like making sure that everyone feels welcome, right? Or they feel like a place where it belongs. But it is political. Like, we are, you know, for the most part, state funded, federally funded. So that's political in itself. So don't think that we're, oh, you know, removed from it all. And it's not a bad thing. Like, we should want to be part of the process. We should want to make sure that everyone has what they need to, you know, to have the information that will inform their life decisions, or, you know, confirm who they are as a person, et cetera. Like, it's not a bad thing, y'all. Lean into it. Come on.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
And not doing anything is upholding, you know, status quo. So you're still making a decision. You're still choosing a side. You're choosing to do nothing and not to help is what happens when you're doing nothing and supposedly being neutral. So like Jamia said, like, there is no neutral. It doesn't exist. You're making a choice either way.
No, that's definitely exactly right. And I think throughout all of this, quite a few library staff have seen that, you know, every action they do, every time they order a book, every time they assign a call number, that does have an impact. And I, you know, very fortunate that I've been able to, through my position as a former president anyways, been able to meet so many staff from around Wyoming. I think when I first joined the association, I could count like on one hand the number of BIPOC librarians and library workers. I think I'm up to two hands now. So it's like I'm slowly getting to know BIPOC workers and in Wyoming. And I just a feel good moment, I guess, to, you know, because I was kind of down before, but it was, we had a virtual conference in 2021, and the person who was facilitating my Zoom session about the EDI statement that we had just put together was on a dark screen. She had her camera off, and when she turned it over to me, she said, "Conrado, you're now the host." And it was the pronunciation of my name that's, you know, kind of threw me off, because it's like, what? That was Spanish. She said it with a Spanish accent. And it took me a while, like, who was that behind the back of the screen that just said host? And she's now a director, which is great to see that she's a director of that county system that she was working for when I first heard her voice. So, but yeah, definitely a lot of people are in Wyoming are seeing that, you know, we can't stop now. We have to keep pushing forward. Otherwise, it's our communities who are going to suffer.
I know, right?
And I talk a lot too, and I think it, you know, I just, it's all like up here, so every time someone asks a question, it just kind of like keeps on going. I should really start setting timers for myself to just to get me to shut up, because sometimes
I love it
stuff. Yeah,
because I didn't know about this whole World Library Association situation.
Yeah.
And I had to text my friends real quick while we were talking, and they were like, yes, they're trolls. And I was like, no! So I'm learning today, okay, because of you. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. World Library Association.
Nerd. For what world? Whose world? Right. I have a lot of questions and concerns. World?
Right. Well, I guess that concludes our interview. Thank you so much for
Thank
visiting
you.
with us and spending an hour with us talking about these kinds of things and these issues and all the work that you've been doing, towards that. It's been great to hear you talk about this. And like Jamia said, and I think I said earlier also, we've been learning some things today.
Yeah.
Although we learn in every interview
Yes.
that
I'm happy to share that, this, all of this unfortunate, through the unfortunate situations, share this with the with your listeners. Hopefully it gives some
Call
sort
to
of
action.
call to action for the listeners. So,
Yeah.
but thank you for having me. It's been a great time chatting with you too.
Aw,
Yes,
thank you. I
thank
appreciate
you.
it. Keep up the
Yes.
good work, and if you need anything,
Any
we're
support?
here.
Let
You any
us
support? I'm
know.
with all the smoke. Yes,
Right?
I appreciate it. No, of me, so I'm with it all. We got your back.
We hope you learned more about Conrado Saldivar. We'd like to share a quote with you before we sign off.
I believe there is power in words, power in asserting our existence, our experience, our lives through words. Jasmine Ward.
Remember to keep walking in your lived voices, and please follow us on all of our social media pages.